listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO FM and KRXO HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, reaching over 1 million Oklahomans every week. Now, the Outdoor Hour, giving you the inside scoop on the great outdoors on 107.7 The Franchise.
As long as I can remember, I've been drawn to the outdoors. There's something primal in each of us that awakens when we step outside the bounds of modern society and back into the vast possibilities of the natural world. The more civilized our lives become, the louder our hearts cry for reconnection with our native ways. Failure is imminent, dangers drawing nigh, but approached with reverence and tact, the outdoors return wisdom and gain. In both the outdoors and in life, harvests are fleeting, but lessons and memories abound. With that in mind, we step forth boldly together in pursuit of ourselves outdoors. We are nothing more than tree stand troubadours. Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour. Have I told you this is my favorite hour of the entire week?
Normally you say you hate it and you wish we weren't here, so I'm assuming you're up to no good.
That's probably a fair assessment.
Yep.
I did say before we came on that I've got a really fun plan for this week's episode, and Josh knows nothing about it. Goldfish knows nothing about it.
I usually don't know much about any of the episodes we do. So,
being that you're a goldfish.
Yes, exactly. So we're on equal footing here for me for every episode, so I'm excited, as I am every week.
This is your just standard mode of operation.
Yes. I come in here with a smile on my face, just ready to dazzle.
I do have a question for you, Goldfish. A couple of weeks ago, we did a Goldfish's Bowl, something like that, segment where you gave us some wisdom.
Yes.
And then I think in last week's episode, we were teasing that you were going to do something, and we never did. So I'm going to put you on notice now. I expect some wisdom from the fish bowl before the end of today's show.
I do have a question for you guys. Yep. Have we talked about Findlay hats in here? Because, strangely enough, I start getting ads all about it, and whenever stuff like that happens, it's usually because we've talked about it in here.
Couldn't say that we have.
Okay.
Couldn't say.
That was just a question that I had for you,
that doesn't count as your wisdom.
I know, it doesn't.
Just to be clear.
Because that wasn't wise.
No, we need more than that. It's interesting you mentioned that, though. I actually have a hat in studio with me today. I've got a brand new – try to get this in focus here for those of you watching on YouTube, which you can do by finding the Franchise Sports YouTube page and following the Outdoor Hour channel. You can always watch this in studio. But check this out, man. This is the new cream hat that I picked up over
cream
at
color.
J.D. Adams & Company. Super red. They also have that mustard yellow that I really like. You've got a couple of those. But this is my new one. I have a hard time sometimes because the cream, depending on what color shirt you're wearing, either looks really clean or it looks like a white hat that you sweated in way too much.
And according to Macho Man, cream always rises to the top.
Thank you, Goldfish.
No problem.
Your wisdom from the fishbowl.
Yep.
We need a sound bit for that.
Since we're doing show and tell,
yeah.
I got some new ESH Slate turkey calls.
Yeah,
for this season. Stoked about that.
Do you have the
yeah, of course,
the scraper,
the
striker?
Yeah,
I was just trying to come up with pestle.
I also got a hen
let me call. See one of these
looks like a hockey puck.
Yeah, these are really cool, Goldfish. Have you ever seen something like this?
No, I haven't. I didn't even know what it was whenever he first started scratching it before
he
got
doing
in here
it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so do you do much turkey hunting? Is this part of your... You need to get this sucker, like, broken in a little bit.
Like, golly. Don't bring that guy in the woods with you.
Well, there's no buildup
on this. This is the ASMR portion of the episode.
You got to get a little bit of buildup on here so that it's got something to scratch against. Yeah. Do you mind
if I
do this?
Use the green part.
Is it okay if I do this?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course, you do you.
For okay. Those of you listening on the radio or on a podcast, we could do some ASMR stuff here. We are sanding the pot call here.
Yeah.
Put that tag on this YouTube video.
Sanding the pot.
You
see how much better that sounds already?
I know.
You get a little bit of like
a little purr.
There you go. I should probably do this closer to the mic so anybody that's trying to listen can actually.
I don't think anyone's trying to listen.
My you know? Poor wife and child just live with this kind of background noise constantly.
So you're that one annoying kid in class?
I am that one annoying kid in class. Were you that kid?
Dude, I can't remember what class it was in, but there was this big metal filing cabinet, and I sat right next to it, and it made the creakiest noise, and I would just sit there in class while it was dead quiet and just creak this door. I don't know.
My poor child, I've got a 2.5-year-old daughter, and she now makes a pretty spot-on turkey gobble, and we'll, like, gobble at each other from across the house.
Nice.
And it is hilarious and drives my poor wife crazy. So we've gone in a lot of different directions. You also have a new pack here. Is this a turkey vest?
Well, you know, FHF gear, I've never pulled the trigger on one until now, and I was looking for something, and they have their lumbar, so this is all modular. This the top here.
Yeah, pull it over here on camera, at least for those who can see it on YouTube. It's cool.
It's really just the hydration pack.
Gotcha.
So it's removable from the lower part of the system.
Oh.
So you can just rock this if you wanted.
I see that.
Right? And then there's a seat pad that also attaches to the bottom of this. So when putting it all together, now you have, I think, is a super great turkey hunting option.
Yeah. I went to a vest 2 years ago for turkey hunting, and I enjoy – mine is nowhere near that fancy. I got mine at, like, Cabela's, I think. But it's got the seat on it. It's got places for your calls to keep, you know, your box call from –
yeah,
hitting on itself. And
this package
yeah
has two spots for two pot calls, and then but all of this Velcro on the inside, you know, you can get different accessories to put in there. So I have one that also holds mouth calls, reed calls.
Which I love doing both. I will carry, I'm a little bougie at times. Those who hunt with me know this, but I will carry a mouth reed or two. You know, cut to different configurations.
Yep.
I will carry at least one slate or pot call with me. And a lot of times I will also take a box call because I feel like you can get such different sounds out of each of them. And depending on the volume that I'm trying to produce, depending on just, you know, where I'm at in my state of mind, some days I want to sit there with the striker and use the pot call. Some days I just want to, you know, chuck on the box call. But that's a nice pack, man. Good setup.
Yeah, so I think it could be cool. So you got a rangefinder pouch here, navigation or your phone, and then, you know, all the other things you want to carry in the little lumbar pack in the back. But what I like about it, too, is that, you know, that quickly becomes a fishing pack or whatever.
Yeah, so it's almost like a fanny pack setup, but then you attach the hydration piece to the top, and then you've got a seat. And it's also an unmistakable camo pattern.
Yeah. Yeah, I went with the camo instead of tan.
I like that.
I do, too.
That's really neat. I've got something for you today.
Mm.
This is not my plan
not
for the episode.
For, thank praise Jesus.
no, this is for you, man.
Oh, looky there. Just finding all the goodies from my southernmost favorite fly shop and skate shop and surf shop.
So tell our listeners about this fly shop / surf shop / skate shop.
It's called Compound Board Shop.
Yep.
In Sarasota, Florida.
Which is where my wife grew up.
Yep. And which I went to quite a few times this year for different events. Stumbled upon the fly shop the first time I was there. And then, yeah, I've just been trying to hit it every time I go to town. I think they have super rad merch. Went there right after the hurricanes just to see if they were good, and they were good, but I still bought some more stuff. And I'm a big fan
of this hat company that they do all their custom merch with. They're great hats, and I love their pelicans, so I have an obsession with pelicans. Not in some weird way. I just think it's a iconic image or animal of the areas that I love to spend my time fishing. So
yeah, it's a cool bird for sure. Well, there you go.
And then had you ever been there before I told you to go check it out?
No. So I've been by there because we'll drive on that little crooked street when we're getting back from Siesta Key a lot of times. But I'd never stopped in. It's just one of those places. I always thought of it as a surf shop, board shop. I didn't know they had any fly fishing gear there.
Yep.
And I've never made a point to stop in. Trust me, I have spent more time and money in surf shops across states than most people will in their entire life.
Falconer, professional surfer. Yeah.
All these things.
All the things.
But no, that's not one I'd ever stopped in. So when you told me, hey, there's this little shop in Sarasota that I found and I love, I made a point the next time I was there to stop in. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've been by here. I've just never been in because you told me it was a fly shop. And I was looking for something totally different. They've got a great little corner of fly fishing equipment. They've got a guy in there tying flies. But they've got surfboards when you first walk in. And they've got
a big skateboard section.
Racks and racks of hats and T-shirts. And it's super cool. So I was actually there on a day that they were doing a end of hurricane season party. And it was super cool, man.
Yeah.
Live music and the whole nine.
Yeah, I think they really, from what I can tell, like they get the community aspect of a shop like that, what it's supposed to be, you know? And so,
Very, very similar.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome, man. If you and J.D. Adams and company were in a coastal area, I could see you guys having a section for surfing, skating. That's what we should do. I'll lead that part.
Okay.
I have done, I mean, my first job out of college was surf lessons and surfboard repairs for a shop in Charleston.
So, in old Charleston, South Carolina?
Yeah. I should have been chasing reds on the fly, but I wasn't.
You should have been chasing reds on a surfboard.
Dude.
During a flood tide.
I have not done that, but I have caught trout from a paddleboard.
Yeah. Well, I don't think paddle boards were, I mean, not to age you, you're not that old. You're significantly younger than me, but I'm not sure seeing a paddle boards were the craze when you were in college.
No, but when I was right out of college and working in a surf shop, they were just kind of on their upswing. So I was in Charleston, moved back to Denver, and had I known then what I know now, I would have been more serious about this, but I kind of joked with several people that I should start a paddleboard shop in Breckenridge. And I actually at one point had paid to incorporate an LLC that I'm not going to give the name away now because it's a really cool name I like.
Well, you still own the LLC, so.
I don't know that I'm still paying on it. I need to – does it work that way?
It's just dormant.
Okay.
But you own it.
Okay. It's called the Rocky Mountain Surf Company. And my plan
I wasn't saying you should have let that out, like, to be clear. Like, I don't know if I would have just, like,
do you want me to be taking
my word on that, you know, but good for you. I appreciate the trust you had in what I said.
There you go. It's because I know nobody's listening.
Wow. How dare you?
I had lunch with a guy yesterday, and then I actually do have a topic for conversation this week, but I had lunch with a guy yesterday that found us, wanted to get to know me. Because he runs a ministry and a missions thing.
Didn't invite me to the lunch.
Yeah.
I know why he didn't invite me, so you don't need to explain to me, bro.
I also know why he didn't invite me.
So
that's cool.
Yeah.
No, I had lunch with a guy. Shout out to Carrie Hilliard for listening to the Outdoor Hour.
Yeah.
And thinking that we could maybe help each other. I enjoyed that.
Hey, Carrie, if you want to get lunch sometime, just let Goldfish know, all right?
Let him know.
Let him know, man.
Sprinkle some flakes.
Have to be associated.
Sprinkle some flakes in his bowl.
Yeah.
Where was I going with that?
I don't know. Oh, that someone was listening, I think.
Oh, no. I remember, though. We were talking about, I apologize to all of our listeners up front. I almost started a paddleboard Breckenridge company, and had I done that, I probably have made a lot of money because that is a huge thing up there in Lake Dillon right now.
So, and you know, the city, the rivers where they've made the like surf waves in towns, Salida, wherever, you know, those guys are hitting those.
I think, is it Crested Butte? Somewhere up there has a really big scene for that.
Yeah, I think Salida has a in-town section. You know, Missoula has one, Boise has one, you name it. Most of the towns that have a little cash or the ability to, you know, a river running through it, they're building little surfs. I think Boulder may have one. Anyways, yeah.
Well, it's almost time for a break.
Yep.
So let's do this. We'll get into the show a little bit more when we come back. Before we do, though, you know we've got to introduce ourselves.
Yep.
This is the Outdoor Hour. I'm Taylor Maples.
I asked him if he did it, and he said,
I just shot a bear.
I asked him again, and again he said,
I just shot a bear.
But I did.
I love it. Best part of my week every time. That handsome gentleman is Joshua Wildman Stratton.
Wildman Stratton.
And the mastermind behind the glass, the lord of the boards on the ones and twos, this is Matty Goldfish.
It's time for the moment you've been waiting for.
Goldfish.
The ending's the best part.
What?
The ending is absolutely the best part.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What is that?
It's from a SpongeBob episode. I think it's like the whenever he's like teaching him how to make the Krabby Patty or whatever. It's like the instruction video or whatever. But yeah, I just found it and it was too good not to use at least once.
Oh, that is the first time I have cried in this studio.
Won't be the last, though.
No.
Happy tears, though.
That's fantastic. This is the Outdoor Hour. I promise we've got a spicy topic on deck.
Oh, geez.
Join us after this on 107.7 The Franchise.
You're listening to the Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor Hour. Taylor Maples, Joshua Wildman Stratton, Matty Goldfish. Hey, Josh.
Hey, what?
What's wrong with the outdoor industry today?
Oh, man. Why are you asking me this?
I was on my way to lunch today thinking, I need something to talk about. And we've spent 3 years hearing Josh's very safely guarded and very carefully crafted opinions on the outdoor space. But I don't think we need to do that anymore.
Got it.
Take that cool muscle off, wild man. Take that muscle off.
Show you the wild man, huh? Man.
No, seriously. I mean, and you had no idea what I was going to ask you. We can go in a lot of different ways with this. There's a lot of really, really good stuff happening in the outdoor space today. You are always really good at sharing a lot of those stories. But I know that there's a lot of stuff that in commercial breaks, even just in your demeanor, seeing you in studio, at times I know there's more to the story. And I know you know so much more about a lot of these things than I do, than our listeners do, than a lot of people even that work in this space do. And I'm kind of being tongue-in-cheek here. You don't need to go too deep down this. But seriously, like, what are some of the things you've learned over the last few years that we have not talked about, or things we've touched on that we weren't completely transparent, for lack of a better word?
Yeah. I mean, so I think there's a few, you know, things for sure. I think one that would be like relevant to the recent kind of things that have gone on with DOGE and kind of the reexamining of how taxpayer money is spent, is, you know, during the former administration, there was hundreds of millions, close to billions of dollars that were of taxpayer dollars that were assigned to conservation. That has all been paused. That will most likely go away. There are people in the outdoor space who think that that's a really good thing. There are people in the outdoor space who think that's a really bad thing. The people who think it's a really good thing, most of them believe that the safety mechanism that has been the handout from the federal government has made hunters and anglers complacent in actually doing the things they need to be doing to support conservation in this country.
What are some of those things that the hunters and anglers should be doing to support conservation?
Actually supporting conservation instead of saying you do because you're a hunter and angler. It takes real money to do a good lion's share of this work on the habitat and across the landscape. So, you know, I think that there are a lot of people, no matter what your walk of life is, that take the Pittman Robinson or Dingell Johnson as an excuse to say they've done their part, when that's nowhere near enough. And so, yes, we put that taxation on ourselves as outdoorsmen and outdoors women and people like a very long time ago. We said this should happen, and we support it, and those things went into place. And but it's not enough. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens, because it's at least for the next 4 years, conservation in America for the last 4 years has been governmental it has been subsidized by the federal government, and that's no longer going to happen. And so it'll be interesting to see. Well, it won't happen at the scale at which it was happening. And so I think conservation organizations are going to have to become significantly more self-sustaining. They're going to have to be more frugal. They're going to have to invest in the right ways. But they're also going to have to do a much better job of telling the value of their story. And they're not going to be able to hang their hat on this grant or that grant. And they're going to have to enter the arena that seemingly they either haven't had the resource to, or they haven't felt like it was important to expand their audience and to actually get, I think, the model of membership conservation, though it raises a lot of money and there are organizations that are successful with that. DU's been around for a long time. You know, they bring in piles and piles of money. I think I would have to, and I support DU. I'm supporting a DU event through picking up a table at upcoming event here in Oklahoma. I support SCI. I support TRCP in Washington, D.C. I support, you know, organizations that I see are doing good work. And by no means am I doing enough in my eyes either. I think that I could be doing more. But I think I'm probably doing more than most people do. And I don't consider myself doing enough. You know, right now how we're raising funds in this country in the biggest ways is through a variety of, you know, governor's tags and tags that are hard to get, you know, at Wild Sheep Foundation this year, one of their tags went for $1.2 million. The Western Hunt and Conservation Expo starts here in a couple of days in Salt Lake City. I fully expect for, you know, the Arizona All-State Mule Deer tag to probably surpass $1 million. Arizona has said that this is the last year that tag will go on. And that money, 100% of that money goes back to Arizona for habitat work. And their Wildlife Commission decided that governor tags are no longer going to be auctioned in that way. And so there's a major shakeup in how large sums of money have been raised in this country for conservation in the last number of years. Some of those ways are coming to an end. And so I think there is going to be a potentially a backslide in progress, because there's going to be a gap of funding that can't, you know, for the work that needs to be done. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I think as an industry, the outdoor industry, from a hunting and fishing perspective, the number of manufacturers who honestly care about creating something that's better for you, that like really, really care about not creating the next cool thing so they can drive sales, but creating a product that is actually going to make you better at and more proficient in the field, something that is not disposable, that will stand the test of time. There are not enough of those.
There's a concept today of planned obsolescence. Mm-hmm. Is that the term?
Mm-hmm.
Where companies are specifically designing things to break down in a certain number of years or months or whatever, so that you will be prepared to go purchase the next product in their line.
I sat next to a gentleman. I think we did at SCI. I sat next to a guy from England, and we talked about the difference between hunting culture in England and hunting culture here.
Yeah. Right? And one of the things that I took away from that conversation is these rifles, and I'm going to get these price points wrong, but like $20,000 and $30,000 firearms.
You're not getting that wrong.
That's correct, though.
Yeah.
And these are family heirlooms. You own one rifle and you're passing it down. But that's another thing I took away, was just the elitism in the hunting community in that part of the world.
Which I don't think is good either. Don't hear me on that.
That's not what I'm saying.
But the approach to it is different, right? He was excited about the ability to make it whatever you wanted in America. And I think that's great, too, to a point. But you don't have to. And I think that the commercialization of hunting, and I don't mean that from there being guides and outfitters and all that. I mean, like, this idea that you have to, and I'm guilty of it, right? As I showed the new gear that I have. There's a difference between getting the tools you need and being convinced the tools that you want are the tools that you need. And I don't think we spend enough time giving people honest options to just find their way in a reasonable way. One of the reasons I love Weatherby firearms, they're really intent on making an approachable, really well-made firearm that is achievable for most. Man, that's a great way to try to approach things. Now, there are some industries and some tools that just have barriers of entry that make them expensive, you know, and by all means, if you know, and I love the guys over at Gunworks, and if you can afford one, awesome, you should be able to go get yourself one. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, Gunworks isn't trying to say that everyone needs a Gunworks. They know who their customer is, and that's who they want to be. And they do a really good job of being who they want to be and appealing to the people they want to appeal to. And if you don't fall into that category, they're okay with it.
Yeah, but they're not trying to be all things to all people and have a product for anybody with money to spend. And I think that's a lot of what I've learned about the outdoor industry. I don't mean to look at that, you know, pessimistically, but I grew up an outdoorsman. I had never referred to the industry until you and I started doing this show together. And you've really, whether you meant to or not, opened my eyes to a lot of what the outdoor industry and world looks like from a business standpoint, because I grew up wearing, you know, hand-me-down camouflage and shooting, you know, Walmart firearms and stuff like that. And we had a great time and created a lot of memories and put food on the table for my family. And that's all well and good. I'm in a different place in life now, and I enjoy wearing, you know, First Light camouflage. I like when they release a new pattern and I've got to go get the full kit. And, but I also recognize that that's not how everyone operates. And that's also not a requirement. We have added, maybe we as the industry have put more barriers up for entry in the perspective of what it need, what it requires to be an outdoorsman in order to sell more products, instead of helping remove barriers and get people outdoors consistently with gear that they can trust.
Yeah. And then, like, the devil's advocate side of this is also, like, do we need more people in the outdoors?
And you've said that before. Your answer is no, we don't need more people in the outdoors. We need more people advocating for the outdoors. Is that correct?
I mean, that's a belief I have, yes. And it's not, yeah. I mean, I think that the argument here for me is that there aren't enough people who understand the value of the land that we're trying to protect, or the value from a national perspective of self-sufficiency, or the value of food security by ensuring that our landscape isn't segmented to the point that we're losing biodiversity. You know, there's a lot of things that I think about when I think about conservation, and it's not just the species that we're trying to protect or that individual piece of habitat. It's about what is the much bigger tapestry that we're weaving. And ultimately for me, where I've landed is the value of land, that that being both public and private, is actually a representation of our nation's national security. And that if we don't start changing the conversation about land and how we're allowing people to engage in that conversation, then ultimately we're going to lose one of the things that is staunchly American, which was in good and bad ways. But, you know, other countries were not setting aside giant swaths of land in national parks and doing those things until America started doing it, right? We were very much on the forefront of that. We weren't, you know, success in America at one point in time looked like having your own piece of ground to tend and to look after, and that that piece of ground, from both cultivation and through harvesting of wild game, could sustain your life. I understand we're in a completely different world today than that. But the importance of that, the ethos of that, hasn't changed and shouldn't change. But we're no longer engaging in that conversation in this country. It's anti-hunter or hunter. It's private or public. It's all of these kind of segmentations of people who are trying to gain their own authority in the conversation, which ultimately is undervaluing our collective power in the conversation in a changing world. And so if, you know, you ask me what's wrong with the outdoor industry, and I would say tribalism is what's wrong with the outdoor industry. We lack the ability to see ourselves as a unified group of people who value land. And instead we see ourselves we group ourselves by, like, our mode of transportation on the land, and trying to be this or that. And inevitably when you play that game, I think the dialogue of judgment and elitism finds its way pretty loud, pretty quickly. So
we got to squeeze in a break. I've got another follow-up question for you. I want to go deeper in that, but we'll have to do it on the other side. Before we go, though, here's an opportunity locally for you to help support conservation. It is benefiting the Canadian Valley Quail Forever. chapter. They're having their sixth annual fundraiser banquet on Thursday, March 27th. That's Thursday, March 27th. Doors open at 5 p.m. And we will put some information up on social media for how you can get involved. That is going to take place in Yukon on Thursday, March 27th at 5 p.m. to support the Canadian Valley Quail Forever group. You're listening to the Outdoor Hour. We'll put that information up on social media. It is going to be at outdoor_hour on Instagram, Twitter. You can find us on Facebook as well as YouTube. So we'll have those details for you there. Join us for more of this conversation on the other side. You're listening to 107.7 The Franchise.
Now back to the Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside the Outdoor Hour. Taylor Maples, Joshua Wildman Stratton, Matty Goldfish behind the glass. Goldfish, do you have more wisdom for us, or did we use
it? I don't have wisdom, but I do have another question that I've been wanting to ask you guys, but I keep on forgetting.
Yeah.
Or maybe a statement. We need to have, like, a camping experience for, like, listeners of the Outdoor Hour. Like, we're going to go here and go camp this weekend. If you guys would like to come camp and hang out with us one weekend, this is where we will be.
Do an Outdoor Hour jamboree.
Yes, exactly.
Of sorts.
Yes. I've been thinking about this, but one, because UCO basketball is almost ending, so my weekends are about to clear up, and I haven't been camping, like real camping, in like 6 years. But I haven't been like out in nature in a while, and I need to change this, and that's going to happen once UCO basketball ends. So I figured, wouldn't it be a great way to parlay that into meeting all the people who listen to us?
What happens when no one shows up?
Then we will have the weirdest, best weekend imaginable, and it'll be even better.
What
probably.
Happens when...
Hey, we know Carrie Hilliard.
Yes.
That guy from my church.
We can get
and my
Rhett
parents
Acker.
Will show up.
Rhett
yes.
Acker would probably show up.
Yes,
do
Rhett
some
would
drones,
come.
Shenanigans. We can get the shroom guy to come.
I don't know if we want to join us in the woods, man.
And this wasn't a back door into hanging out with the shroom guy in the woods, just so you guys know.
I
just thought of that now.
Sobriety is important. Yeah.
Jacob DeVecchio.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right there.
Yeah.
We should get Jacob. You know, he was on Rolling Stone magazine.
He
See,
was.
Man.
In it.
There we go.
On the cover of a Rolling Stone.
I like to think that the Outdoor Hour was kind of his jumping off point.
Yeah. I'd like to, I believe that. I want to believe
sure.
that. Yeah. I want to believe that.
But yeah,
dude, I'm down. We could also like partner with another organization.
For real.
You know? Yeah. I'm
Do
into
a
it.
Jamboree in J.D. Adams parking lot or something?
No, that's not the outdoors.
We could meet there and then drive somewhere, yes. possibly.
But yeah, that would, I don't know. It would just be fun. We used to do like on Father's Day in the church growing up, like we would have a big Father's Day camp out where everybody would just, you know, you'd go with your dad, go hang out on the weekend. I'm not saying I'd want to do it on Father's Day or anything like that, but mm-hmm. just something like the same deal. Brotherhood, hanging out. Dudes being in the wild, and females, if you want to come, who cares?
It'd be fun. I want to jump back in. I love that idea, Goldfish. I think that's a really wise thought from the fishbowl.
From the fishbowl.
Congrats on
from
that.
From the fishbowl.
You know, I was at J.D. Adams & Company last week, and Tom and I had a really interesting conversation. You mentioned the idea of tribalism
mm-hmm.
in using the outdoors, whether, you know, if you're a kayaker, your concept, I think, is you're looking for more ways to create opportunities for you to use the outdoors in that mode.
Yep.
And if you're a hunter, you're looking for more ways to use the outdoors in that mode. He made a really interesting comment. Tom did. He had just gotten back from the Grand Canyon. And when he flew into Arizona, he said, man, you cannot believe the number of guys getting off the plane with their golf clubs flying
oh, yeah.
into Arizona.
Yeah.
And he said, it was so funny because I'm looking at all these guys and they're all dressed interchangeably. They've got shorts and a polo and either a visor or a hat, and they're carrying the clubs. Like, you could pick any five of these guys and intersperse them with five others, and you would have no idea that it's any different. And he said, and then I have to laugh because I'm looking around this fly shop, and, I mean, we're the same. We're all wearing, you know, poncho shirts, Howler Brother shirts, Orvis shirts, Sims stuff, like – exact same concept, but it felt so foreign to him because that was not his mode, right?
Yeah.
Very, very intriguing. But so here's my question for you, Josh, to dive back in a little bit deeper, and we've only got a few more minutes left in this week's show. You've alluded several times throughout the 3 years we've been doing this to a holistic view of conservation.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that your vision is not tribalism. I know that it's not looking at the outdoors and the way that it can benefit these perspectives or these people. Challenge me a little bit. If I'm thinking about conservation and I'm thinking about the outdoors, how should I be trying to look at this?
I mean, I think you should look at it the way you want to look at it, first off. Like, how I choose to look at it is influenced by my experience. And so I think that people need to find their own way to wherever they're going to land. But how I think about it, if we were to kind of look at this, we could start with public land. If we were to look at public land and how I choose to look at public land is that it is part of the public trust. And so if it's part of the public trust, then it has to benefit the public. And there are magnitudes of ways that it could benefit the public, whether that's grazing leases, whether that's mineral extraction, whether that's standing up hunting outfitters or fishing outfitters, or whether that's just simple access for any American to explore that land the way that they want to explore it. What we have in America is this constant fight between special interest groups that I think at times one group is winning and at times another group is winning. And the reality is, like, let's talk grazing leases, for instance. If grazing leases are executed appropriately, we don't have buffalo on the landscape anymore. Having cows on the landscape is incredibly beneficial. Now, we don't want to take that to the extreme where overgrazing and degradation of the habitat. But again, if it's done in a balanced approach, it's incredibly beneficial. If mineral extraction is happening, and I believe it should be, again, let's do that in a balanced approach that ensures that we maintain the access and opportunities for the other stakeholders on that landscape. And it seems to be we want to have a feast or famine situation. Again, going back to, like, well, if I'm right, you're wrong, which is seems to be how we like to have a lot of conversations in this country. And the reality is this isn't an or conversation. It's an and conversation. We need to have a lot more and conversations. What I want to see is the value of that land from a resource perspective being utilized to the best of its the best way we can for all stakeholders, because the ripple out effects of that are tremendously beneficial to our country and are tremendously beneficial to the longevity of our ecosystem. And so that's how I think about public land is, and if you look at the North American model of conservation suggests that there shouldn't be one single group that is more authoritative than the other. And so even if we're following our own principles at which we claim to be true, that's how we would be doing it. From a private land perspective, I think this is hard, and it's hard for me at times as well, is as soon as ownership gets attached to something, we want the freedom of ownership. We want the freedom to do with that land as we see fit. And but I can tell you from the farmers, the ranchers, the stewards of private land, who are just in the business of recreational land, all of them, their real heart intent is to steward something that lasts generations. They want to see that land better than it was the year before or the 10 years before that. And I think there are some circumstances where the economics of farming force people to make decisions that maybe they wouldn't necessarily make. Monocropping, non-regenerative agriculture in general has some limitations that we probably should collectively look at. But if we looked at a piece of ground as our opportunity to steward something and leave it better than it was when we got it, I think most people would look differently at their land. Now, again, I think farmers and ranchers wake up every day and that's their intent. I think a lot of recreational land owners maybe at times are more self-serving in how they think. How do I get the biggest deer for me? How do I, you know, hold more deer here? Instead of looking at it from the collective perspective of if I steward this land appropriately and make it better habitat, what does that do for the deer herd that is on my land, that may be on other people's land too? What does it do for the turkey population in this area? What does it do for the migratory birds in this area, in this flight path? And so if we can just step out of self a little more and think more holistically in nature, I think that's how I choose to look at it. But again, I don't want I don't want any one group to win that conversation. What I want is the land to win that conversation. Because if the land is winning, then ultimately we're all winning. And ultimately we're all finding ourselves in a place where we have more opportunity, whether that be ranching, agriculture, oil and gas, recreation, hunting, fishing, whatever. That all stems upon us all collectively changing how we think about the value of land. And it's not the easy button. Like, that doesn't exist in this world that I'd love to live in. Nothing about it is easy. All of it is intentional, and all of it is probably a lot more compromised than anything, where you actually have to tell yourself, no, I can't do that, because the long-term effects of that do not get me where I want to go 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years from now.
Yeah, and I like your perspective that it seems obvious that it does take a little bit of compromise, but it takes a collaboration, and it takes a willingness to get outside of yourself and your own needs and interests to think about what's good for the greater good for the land.
Yeah, and what those opportunities present, you know, my sole intent, continuing to hone my skills and my experiences in the outdoors. Yes, obviously they're tremendously rewarding for me as a person, right? They center me back to a version of myself that I like better, that I do think makes me a better human being in society. But it's also so that I can share that knowledge with others. It's not mine. Just like the land's not really mine. It's going to be here when I die. I get to explore it for now, for this time, for this period that I'm on this earth. I get to do that. And I owe it to the next person who gets that opportunity, whether it's my children or my grandchildren or my great-grandchildren or people I've never met before. I owe it to them to be a steward who is looking at the land not as mine, but as ours.
There's been a lot of quotes over the years of doing this show that I've taken away that have really changed my thought process in the outdoors. But one of my favorites is very similar to what you just said, and it came from the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers guys when they were on the show of, it's not our land, it's our turn on the land. And I think that's really important. Hey, we're up against it. Thank you, Josh, for sharing some of your thoughts just off the cuff this week.
Yeah, thanks for the heads up, you jerk. I'm going to head out to the National Wild Turkey Federation convention this week in Nashville. So I'll bring back some stories from the things I find and people I run into on next week's episode.
That's awesome. We got a couple of cool episodes coming up in the coming weeks. I've got a saltwater fly fishing guide buddy that's going to call in from South Florida to talk about what's going on in that part of the world and some conservation efforts and things you should be aware of. We've got the guys from the Canadian Valley Quail Forever lined up to come in and talk more about their event and their initiatives, so keep an eye out for those as well. You can follow us on social media at the Outdoor_Hour pages. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. You can find me on all of those as well at T_Maples. Josh is available on Instagram at Against_Current. Don't forget, you can always follow the franchise as well. Find us on YouTube if you want to watch these shows being produced in studio. We've got cameras. We're fancy. We're handsome. We're both bald. Spoiler alert. But there you go. We got that for you. So, Goldfish, thank you, man.
No problem, homies. I'll see you next week.
Always enjoy it. That's Joshua Wildman Stratton. I am Taylor Maples. This is the Outdoor Hour. We'll see you next time. Until then, go boldly, and we'll see you outdoors.